This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 334, Robux, No Bucks. And welcome once again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, one of your co-hosts, who's about to introduce Michael Rowe, another one of your co-hosts. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Michael. This is Michael Rowe, one of your co-hosts, who's glad to be talking to one of your other co-hosts, Michael Martin. How are you?
We are Michaels all the way down, as one might say. Fun show today. Lots of interesting topics, and we're just going to
We already did a major pruning. The audience doesn't know how much pruning we have to do because of all the great links that they send in.
Well, the sacred timeline must be preserved, and lucky for you, we've pruned all the things that need to be pruned and kept the best of the best for you. So let's talk about birthdays to start, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
So you wanted to be among the first, well, maybe not among the first,
well, among those who belatedly wish Gene Roddenberry a happy 100th birthday, which was actually yesterday.
Yep.
And, you know, we're a bit of the Star Wars geekery on this show at times.
And Star Trek, too.
And Star Trek. Did I say Star Wars? Oh, my God. I have lost all cred.
No worries.
I might even have to edit that cred, but I'm not going to because, you know, this show's live. We're doing it live.
That's what we do.
So, it's really, really cool. And you were mentioning the other day, and we were chatting about Star Trek Lower Decks. Did you watch this week's episode?
I watched the episode that came out last week, and I did not watch this week's because I had to finish Schmigadoon.
Yes, and I finished Schmigadoon, and what'd you think?
Oh, was it fun? Schmigalicious.
It was.
And I'm hoping they come back for another season, so...
Yeah, I thought about that, but I don't know how they do it.
Easy.
Unless it's somebody else gets trapped in Schmigadoon.
Bingo. You just keep trapping people and just,
it's like,
you know,
Groundhog Day all over again.
Pick a little, talk a little. It's going to be great, you know.
Pick a little, talk a little.
Come on. Bring another couple in there and have them find true love. It'll be awesome.
Yes. Very fun. Very fun. I enjoy it.
No spoilers, though.
No.
So what is the spoiler
limitation on streaming shows?
Oh, gosh. You know, who knows? I think there's at least a year, probably.
Yeah.
I would say.
Probably. I would say.
So speaking of spoilers, Michael, you found this Tech Dirt, great name for a site, spoiler here about a particular court who said, you know what? No ROMs for you.
Yeah. You know, we were talking a couple of weeks ago with our dear friend and co-host Andy Piper about his recent build of a ROM machine to play old Nintendo ROMs and NES ROMs and other
and
ROMs.
SNES and, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the unfortunate thing is there's a site called ROM Universe, and I actually remember this site. The guy has been storing Nintendo ROMs for a long time because, you know, these games are unavailable anymore. The devices don't exist anymore. In many cases, the creator of those games are no longer around either. And so he had a website where he was cataloging ROMs for all the old Nintendo and other games. And back in 2019, Nintendo found out about it and tried to sue him and shut it down. Well, as of the 17th of August, 2021, Nintendo has won. And the ROM universe has to be shut down. They have a permanent injunction filed against them to shut it down. So it's a bummer.
What are all the Romulans to do?
I've got friends out in California who are big video cabinet fans.
Oh yeah.
And they actually have some cabinets that they, you know, purchased in Japan and brought over. Mm-hmm. But they also use ROMs. A lot of ROMs,
yep.
Right? You know, they get a small low powered PC, they put it in a cabinet and attach it to a, you know, a joystick and a large monitor, and they treat it like a cabinet, but it's really just running a bunch of ROMs. So this is one of those ones that really kind of bugs me, in the fact that the stuff is no longer available. You can't right. buy it. People would give money to the companies if they would put them out.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Yes, there's some small group that won't and never will, and they'll still find the ROMs and burn them themselves, right? But, you know, it's a shame. It really is. And the guy's been charged to pay $2.1 million in damages.
Wow.
Yeah. Fortunately for him, it was only in $50 a month installments. So I guess he had time, but he failed to make some of those payments and they shut him down.
Oh, you know, it is a little crazy. And you would hope that software like this would not go, it would be gone essentially for all time.
It becomes extinct.
It becomes extinct, right? You know, it's pruned from the timeline. You cannot get to it anymore along those.
As if it didn't exist.
Yep. Which is kind of a sad thing.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about something about a little happier in this regard. Another example from TechDirt here too, talking about video games that in recent years, and maybe even more than just years, decades, that have been demonized for being all kinds of terrible bad influences, actually have some redeeming qualities to them. And that's been a overarching theme for us, certainly on Absolutely. This podcast for a long time. So this is very appropriate for it to be here. And the article does give a few examples of games for therapeutic purposes, and whether those therapeutic purposes are distracting you from the things that are maybe causing you health issues or problems, or just putting you in the right mindset. It's actually pretty good. And the National Institutes of Health here, it looks like, have offered a $7.5 million grant to expand these kinds of capabilities. I was reminded, Michael, of the virtual reality example for burn victims, that in the hospital would put on the VR headset and go swooshing down a slope, which would give a degree of relief, right? Without having to use any kind of medicine that could be addictive or whatever, right? So great article, in the sense that this is important, and video games do have a important purpose and place to play.
Yeah, as you say, it fits right in our wheelhouse. You know, the whole idea of using the mental escape that a video game can provide for, you know, combating depression, as an example. I love the example we talked about, that you just mentioned again, we talked about a couple of years ago on the burn victims. Gosh, I remember 10 or more years ago, we had examples of providing empathy, where there was a build inside of Second Life that allowed you to experience what somebody experiences in schizophrenia. And you know, how to gain a level of empathy for people. So not only is it clinically good for you,
right,
but also good for others, because you can provide that level of understanding and empathy that you couldn't really express by just saying, here's a pamphlet I picked up at the doctor's office, right? So yeah, great article. Absolutely agree with it. And, you know, one of the cool things about it is the technology that comes out of it, not just the games themselves, but the accessories from companies like Emotive, sure, that we've talked about for years, who have, you know, created these brain computer interfaces. And we did see an article about a company called BrainQ this past week that was creating devices for physical rehabilitation after a stroke. So kind of just tie that all together quite nicely, as it kind of brings together the emotional aspect, the health aspect, and the therapeutic aspect here. So very, very cool.
Yeah. And as a wise person once said, in all things, moderation, including moderation,
yes,
you have to take on board too, that there are some games that are easy to just play a lot. And I know you and I have had this conversation more than once about what games have you stopped playing, right?
Yes.
So looping back to the Star Trek example, I had been playing the Star Trek, whatever game it was on Apple Arcade for a while and doing all the leveling up and so on and so forth. And it's like, you know what? I'm just leveling up for the sake of leveling up and just, you know, mashing buttons. And I'm like, yep, you know what? Delete, done. So it was fun while it lasted, but you have to be able to also say it's done and I'm done.
Yeah. It was fun. Kind of the initial story thread.
Yeah.
Right. And then you had to play it again at a harder level and again at a harder level. And all of, at that point it was just to level up. And the only part that would have been a little bit fun at that point would be to do the social aspect, where you're doing kind of a guild thing, but even that would be a grind.
Yeah, so, I turned that off right from the beginning. It's like, nope, don't want to do that. I have to dig up my I Game Alone parody again.
Yes.
So an environment, Michael, that you were talking to me a little bit about in the pre-show, Roblox, is an environment where you attract lots of people. You can play within the environment much like you can within Minecraft. And there's a rather detailed piece of journalism off of Six Colors and a YouTube video that's alongside of it that demonstrates how the business of this platform and environment, along with their internal currency, is being used to control the experience and control the value that can be created in it. So
yeah.
I didn't have a chance to watch it yet, but what's the summary?
Well, the video itself is a 20-minute summary of a couple years worth of research.
Wow.
So I'll try to give it its due, but I highly recommend that you go over to the People Make Games Patreon. It's a video podcast that is all about the people behind games and, you know, doing research on games, et cetera. I really think we should try to get them on our show once. The video that they put out was really a deep dive in the world of Roblox. And Roblox went public recently.
Right.
Worth now $41 billion with a B dollars in their IPO.
Would that be U.S. Dollars or Roblox dollars?
Yes. No. U.S. dollars. The basic idea is it's got, you know, 200, 250 million people, I think, paying each month to play in this world. And they have a very, very heavy push to encourage kids between the ages of like 8 and 14 to create experiences in world that they can make money off of. Mm-hmm. Sounds great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you pay $5 a month to be able to build in the world and experience it. That gives you Robux, and those Robux you use to buy experiences. Not really games, because if they were games, it'd be a game store inside of a game store if you hosted it on iOS, which they do. Right. So it's experiences. It's not creating games. And it goes through a deep dive on how that works. And I remember in the early days of Second Life, right, there were a lot of people that were trying to make a living in Second Life. And Second Life has its own in-world currency. Linden bucks, I think it was, or something like
Linden
that.
Linden dollars. Yeah.
Yep. And there was an exchange rate. Right. And there are exchanges where you could do the exchange rate. In Roblox, there is one exchange rate, and it's controlled by Roblox. And most in-game currencies that you can cash out have a clip before that you can cash out. Second Life was $5 or $10 that you could cash out at a time. Minecraft is $100. Right? But in Roblox, it's $1,000. So, really high cap before you can cash it out. That's the first thing. Second thing, there is only one marketplace for discoverability of games. But there's no search function. It pretty much only lists the top 1,000 games people are currently playing right now. And there are 22 million games that people have created in the platform.
Wow, so that must refresh all the time then, right?
It does, and it's the top 1,000.
Yeah.
So if you're a kid and you're just starting out and you're creating your first game, you're not going to be exposed. You've got to get thousands of people playing your game to even have a chance of your game showing up in the store. However, once you create these, they will offer to promote you if you buy an ad on the store. And you buy that in Robux. Okay? So that's the second aspect. Now, the third aspect is, yes, the exchange rate, and I can't remember the exact exchange rate, but it's, you know, comparable to what you would expect. And so if you cash out your $1,000, which is roughly 100,000 Robux, they, at exchange time, will give you $350 for that $1,000.
So wait a minute.
So you immediately take a huge percentage hit right there because they don't want you to cash it out. They want you to spend the money in game.
Sure.
So it's kind of like you know the idea of script in a company town. It's basically a script example.
Company store. Yep.
It's basically a script example. So one, you can work your butt off to create something. Most of the creators are individuals, kids, who are told to, you know, work hard and you can make it. But then you have to buy exposure. Once you do get some exposure, there are professional groups that are making a living in there, and they will then take your idea and just rewrite it and make it better, right? Or reskin it, because there's no copyright protection inside the game. Anybody can duplicate somebody else's. You got a script model to where if you try to cash it out, it loses a significant value. And the cash out is so high that even if you have a moderately successful game, the likelihood that you'll get $1,000 to cash out is pretty low. And it's a vicious cycle. And the whole thing is just encourages you as a platform to stay on the platform and take the money that you make in the platform and spend it in the platform. And if you pay others to do work for you in the platform, and you can only pay them with platform money, they take a cut there too. So they take a
transaction-based cut, right? So if you
they were doing a 10K analysis of the IPO form and the financial forms.
Yeah.
And the best they could figure is that a creator who actually can make money out of there gets roughly 17% of the dollar.
Wow.
Versus Apple, which will give you 70%. Or, you know, even Second Life, which will give you, you know, significantly more, right? They give you 90-something percent. It's vicious, and it's targeting kids. It's targeting kids to do the creation. So I highly recommend you watch the video. And it's like all the antithesis of the creator world. To get people to become creators. So I was surprised to find this one. I am going to try to check out their podcast. It was interesting to see it over at Six Colors, which is tends to be an Apple podcast, right? An Apple website. Mm-hmm. Jason Snell over there is, you know, former senior editor or chief editor of Macworld magazine. So, very interesting. Highly recommend. And I know we've talked about Roblox on this show before.
Sure.
Because of its hype of being great for creators and for kids to be able to do this stuff. And here's the other side of it. Very, very interesting. Highly recommend people watch it.
Yeah, you have to wonder, with all the attention that cryptocurrencies have been getting from state and federal governments and the regulatory bodies, that something like this would attract that kind of attention to. Because at the end of the day, it's acting as a currency and a bank and an exchange platform all in one, which is like, yikes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, I remember talking about the whole script company store, et cetera, model with Second Life, you know, 12 years ago. And it was, and I did not realize how good we had it then.
Yeah. Very interesting. All right. So moving on from one interesting thing to the next, we have, and we've talked about things like this once or twice before, doing something in real life that is what you might see in the movies. And here we have a guy who has built web shooters like Spider-Man. And this is pretty incredible. I've watched at least a little bit of it, so I like the idea of the web hooks, which you know, for those of you in the tech audience, you'll appreciate that too. To be able to shoot your rope out, have it wrap around something and allow you to hang out where you need to, and how do you shoot it in a safe and effective way over longer distances.
Yeah, we actually did a talk about one of the guy's earlier videos, not about this, but he was doing a similar web shooter type thing, but it wasn't to the point of then being able to swing, right, and actually do the swinging from web shooter to web shooter or from strand to strand as he crosses a chasm. Right?
Yeah.
And this is awesome. He goes through all the tech. He goes through the build. He goes through the rationale of what he does, when and how, and et cetera. And by the end of the video, you're just cheering him on, going, go, go, go. You can do it. Go for three. Go for three.
Be awesome. So staying on the theme of things that you wear on your wrists and you use for various purposes, Michael, you found, and I saw it, and I didn't read my way through this when I first came across my my screen, my feed. So it was like, okay, it's a little bit of a clickbait, but boy, there's actually something really interesting here about using an Apple Watch.
Yes.
Effectively in...
Quite effectively.
Very effectively.
Yeah, we've talked about all the great positive things about the Apple Watch, you know, people falling in a hospital and getting immediate emergency care, people, you know, having their life saved because it identifies that they have a heart murmur or whatever, right?
Yep.
Well, this is an example of the other side of the story, or the rest of the story. A group of entrepreneurs, we shall call them, decided to see if they could, and by the way, yes, they did, if they could use an Apple Watch to track a mark and ultimately rob them. So what they did is they took an Apple Watch and they put it on Find My, right? So you can find it. And then they stashed it on a drug courier.
On his car.
Just done a drug deal and was flush with $500,000 in cash. They were then able to just, you know, follow him all the way back from where his car went, back to the hotel where the guy was staying, and then rob him for $500,000 in cash. So, you know, I guess you'd kind of have to, you know, we joke about the watch's battery.
Yep.
You'd have to know you want to rob him within the day. Yeah, and you probably don't want to use a 7, but you know, you could probably use a 3 or a 4. Make sure it has cellular, so that costs you $10 extra for that month. But it was very, very interesting, and you know, it's different than the AirTags, right? Because you can get a cellular watch, right? So it will broadcast its own location. It doesn't depend on a network of iOS devices to track it like the AirTags do. But yeah, this is one of those ones that go, yeah, no matter how good you make security or safety, somebody will figure out how to ruin it for you.
Well, you know, what struck me about this was the form factor of the watch is interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And that they stashed it on the car, but in theory, if you wanted a little bit more time and battery power and not be detectable, you could do the same thing with a phone.
Yeah.
Right?
It could be an Android phone for that matter.
Yeah. And there are Find My solutions in a variety of ways. So if you wanted to do the Spidey tracers, you know.
Yeah. He had the little right? spiders that he would stick on things. Yep.
Right. There are ways to do this. So obviously the phone, the watch, shoot, you could put an iPad somewhere. Mac, you know.
You want a mini though. You want the iPad.
Maybe the mini, maybe a MacBook Air, right? You could slide that into a manila envelope perhaps.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, but the Air doesn't have cellular yet.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Yeah. So, you got to have a cellular, right?
Got to have a cellular connection. Yeah.
So.
And a good enough battery.
And a good enough battery. It, like I said, if you're going to rob them within the day, the watch is fine.
So if you wanted to take something out for a spin, like underwater, I guess you could put a watch in the bedrock submersible and know where it was at all times. But shoot, this autonomous vehicle is designed to do mapping and reporting back on its own anyhow, right? So probably don't need any device.
But this this is cool. I know the iRobot actually has a or had a research office in Research Triangle Park in North Carolina. That was for their submarine division. Because they do autonomous small subs too. But the Bedrock Ocean Explorer drone is awesome looking, and the resolution that it tracks for mapping the last real unexplored part of the globe, which is deep sea underwater mapping. Very, very cool. I saw this one and thought back to, you know, the work that iRobot had done and some of the other ones, and this is cool. Nothing else needs to be said about it. It was cool. I like it. I can't wait to see, you know, next time I'm flying my Microsoft Flight Simulator and I crash in the ocean. Not that that's ever happened. It'd be nice to be able to, you know, sink it all the way to the bottom and see what's down there.
Absolutely. And I was remembering the iRobot. Didn't they have the Scuba? But that was the robot that was to mop your floor. So, right. But that would have been a great name for underwater traversing robot too.
Yeah.
The Scuba 2.
Scooby-Doo? I was going to Scooby-Doo. And then in my brain, I was going to say Scooby-Doo, but I was going to say it as I'm smarter than the average bear, which is not Scooby-Doo.
No.
What was the name of the bear?
Yogi.
Yogi Bear. Yeah, Yogi Bear.
With a boo-boo?
With a boo-boo. Hey, boo-boo. It's a picnic basket. So for some reason, Scooby-Doo in my head is Yogi Bear.
Well, that's they're really all Hanna-Barbera, so I mean, yes, there's probably
The same actor did
design
the voice.
Language and, you know, stuff. So yeah, okay, listening audience, ready? Find the connection between Yogi and Scooby-Doo. Go.
Well, speaking of connections, real quick, I know we got only a minute or two to go.
Yeah,
I wanted to call out. This week has been Tesla's AI Day.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
There's a great article from TechCrunch that includes a video in it, which is the full 3.5 hours of Tech Day, AI Day. And I recommend you go look at around 2 hours and 6 minutes.
Roughly,
where they demonstrate the Tesla bot. Now, it's not actually the Tesla bot. What it is a person in a costume that looks kind of like the Tesla bot.
They don't get damaged with a door opening or anything, do they?
No. But, okay. You know, the other thing I saw this week was Boston Dynamics robots, you know, they're bipedal human-like robots. Yep. And
doing
they
the
are
parkour.
Just... Oh, God, they've gotten good. They've gotten really good. This is one of the things they talked about at AI Day was really this 5 foot, 825-pound bot that is designed to be able to lift 150 pounds, walk at 5 miles an hour, and ultimately maybe do all that crap you don't want to do anymore.
Like, yeah, go the for article groceries. Calls it out. Yeah, for going to grocery shopping, but you know, having gone grocery shopping just recently, I seriously doubt that the bot would have been able to go into the storeroom, find out whether there was any cheerwine, and bring it out. Right?
Right.
You'd still have to interact. So maybe the shopping bot has to talk to the store bot.
I was about to say, if their fulfillment system was set up correctly and their supply chain and their inventory was correct, that you wouldn't even have to do that. It would just send a signal in advance saying, hey, Michael wants some cheerwine, dang it.
Yeah.
And it would show up. And real quick, right at the end, I was a big Skyrim Elder Scrolls 5 fan. I can't believe it's been 10 years since that game came out. And Bethesda Works is announcing new updates coming out on November 11th, 10 years after the original launch date, called the Skyrim Special Edition. And they also, in this article, have released a VR port. So I'm looking forward to this. I'll have to see what it adds over what I have still.
And if you only were able to get a ROM and a simulated fishing, you know, get up, you could, you know, interact with that too.
Then I could use the Bedrock robot to go at the bottom of those lakes and rivers to find where all the fish are hiding. And it all fits together.
All in one. Well, if you liked that ending, come back for another one next week. And if you didn't, send us a few links and we'll try to prune them into our sacred timeline and bring it forward for you for our next episode in the coming week. Thanks everyone for listening. Glad you're here. Talk to you soon. See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye, boo-boo.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.